Suzuki line. You must never cross a Suzuki line. Cross a picky line. With their wives and children they stand together. Never cross a picky line. You must never cross a picky line.
This is the show Waverline, and joining me is Billy Robinson. Welcome to the show, Billy.
Good afternoon.
Now, Billy is the past president of UAW 2036 in Henderson, Kentucky. And Billy, why don't you talk about, first of all, what's been happening over the last couple of years? You've been you were locked out, and you've been in a long, epic struggle, and we want to talk about what the lessons of your struggle have been.
Well, as of right now, we've been out 49 and a half months. And I don't know that the lessons to be learned are is that the UAW just totally failed to support us and basically deserted us. And in the last couple of years, they cut off our benefits, all of our strike benefits, pay and insurance, medical and everything else, in September of 1999. And after tremendous protests all across the country from a lot of union members, both UAW and other unions, they all of a sudden on October the 5th, 2000, reinstated the strike benefits and even doubled the strike pay. And just as fast as they did that, 1 year later, in October of 2001, they sent word down that they was reducing the strike benefits from double back to single, which was to $175 a week, and at the same time told us that we needed to vote on that company proposal. Now, to bring that point to mind, we had already voted that company proposal down three times. Previously, there had never been a word or anything else changed. In the period of time when they cut our strike benefits off, when we protested against them and went public with it, they put us under an administratorship in May of 2000, took all the union's books, records, checkbooks, and everything else, and placed the local under an administratorship. And we protested that also. So, we voted on this proposal in November of 2001, again rejecting it. This is the same proposal that we had voted on four times then and rejected it every time overwhelmingly. Well, as soon as we did that, the regional director, Terry Thurman, out of Region 3, called the executive board, the executive officers, which I was not a part of anymore, because in the 2000 elections, the international refused to let my name appear on the ballot, sent in four international reps to conduct the election, brought their own ballots with them where that they could ensure that my name didn't appear on it, even though the rank and file membership overwhelmingly supported me in another run for president. So they called the members to Indianapolis in November of 2001 and told them at that time that as of January the 15th, the international would no longer support strike benefits to the members.
And how many members are we talking about, Billy?
We had 430 when we came out in 1998. At the time that they told us they was going to cut the strike benefits off, we had 300 members drawing strike benefits.
And what is this going to mean to organizing in the South? I mean, Kentucky is mostly unorganized. Is this going to have a bad effect on trying to organize unorganized workers?
Well, you're not going to be able to organize anything in this part of the country. It's not only hurt UAW in her attempts to organize. They just lost a big drive down at Nissan down in Tennessee. And our situation was made public to the members down there. I know of organizing drives in Georgia, Alabama, up in Indiana, and in Kentucky, that every time that they try to get organizing going on, the first thing the company does is throw our situation out in front of the people, and they either overwhelmingly lose the election or they just pull and won't even have an election to go with. Now, what bothers me so much about it is they publicly state in their executive board minutes that if we didn't accept the proposal, that they would pull our charter. Well, as of March 28th, 2002, they didn't even have the courtesy to notify the officers of the local. They sent a letter right to the company, and on March 28, 2002, to Nathan Nemeth, who's the company attorney, stating the International Union and its Local 2036 hereby disclaim interest in representing hourly employees at Accuride's Henderson, Kentucky facility. So basically, they can't make us go away, so they pull our charter. They had stated that they would give the company one final offer. They haven't done that. They really have not given us any support whatsoever, and everybody in this part of the country has been watching it. So their chances of organizing anything in this part of the country are slim to none. But it's not only hurt UAW. Steel workers are having a heck of a time. They started organizing drives at four or five plants around, and I know they've been beat, and I know the reason they've been beat. And like I say, the steel workers represent the employees at Alcoa over Newburgh, which is 20 miles away, and they also represent the Dana and Henderson and Alcoa. I mean, Alcan down is another aluminum mill. And all three of them signed a contract within the last year and a half. And every one of them, to the man, had been told when they went into contract negotiations that unless you accept this contract straight out, you better look up the road there to Accuride, because we'll do you the same way that we did those employees there.
Now,
that gives you an idea of what happens to organizing.
Now, when you your local went out, first of all, why don't you talk about the issues that forced your local to take up a fight with the Accuride company, and they make wheels, one of the biggest makers of wheels in the country.
Well, the issues out there was no union representation within the plant. The only way that a person could get a steward was that the supervisor deem it a matter of importance. Most importantly, they wanted a unilateral and unrestricted right to subcontract any work. They also wanted the ability where they said no person or classification had a right to any certain job, which basically give them more rights than at-will employment has.
Hello?
That left the door wide open to all their harassment and discriminations. They refused to allow union dues to be deducted out of paychecks. They wouldn't recognize any union official within the plant. They had brief language in there about a steward, but the only way that you could have a steward was if a supervisor deemed it was a matter of importance, and then you had to write the grievance out to work on your own time and process it in a lengthy processing period, yeah.
So it sounded like they wanted a company union.
Yes, they wanted a company union, and from the way the UAW acted with the company, they was in agreement with it.
Well,
because they have tried to force that company proposal down our throat five times.
So you actually had five votes for that proposal?
No, that was just on the last proposal. We've had nine votes altogether. and overwhelmingly voted every one of them down. Because they wanted language, in our insurance, the unilateral and unrestricted right to amend, modify, alter, change, or delete any coverage, premium, copay, or anything else that had to do with the insurance. They wanted the same language in our pension. In other words, anytime they got ready, they come in and cancel your pension, there's nothing you can do about it. And our pension don't amount to anything anyway, but still, it's something you cling to, hoping it gets better, you know.
Excuse me. Now, why would the UAW National Union, since they want to organize the South, or they say they want to organize the South, tell your members and your local that you shouldn't really fight for what seem to be basic rights as far as union members? Why would they do something like that?
I think the UAW has become, since back in the early 80s, a company union, totally a company union. They went into business with the big three automakers when they formed the joint funds deals for the training purposes of the auto workers. And all they're interested is in a dues structure. They're out busily trying to organize state workers and teachers and people who ordinarily never have the right to strike. That way the due structure never goes away. They're too busy counting the millions and the billions of dollars that they have in the strike fund and in the whole assets of the UAW and the joint funds to worry about what 400 members in Kentucky was. The only thing that they dislike about us is we won't shut up and go away.
And how much money do they have on their strike fund?
They got over $950 million in the strike fund. That's just in the strike fund. I think there's nearly $6 billion in the joint funds that they jointly manage with General Motors.
And how much is the interest on that strike fund?
I don't have a clue.
But it's probably $70, $80, $90 million.
Yeah, I'd say every bit of that.
And where is that money going to?
It goes into the strike fund, and they do with it, I think, as they please, you know. Supposedly there should be an accounting to the rank and file, but they have no regard for the rank and file. They look down their noses at the rank and file. Yet they mouth the sentiments that we are, you know, the rank and file is the ultimate authority in the union. But when we try to express our thoughts, they totally disregard us.
And what was your first experience when you found out that they were going to oppose you and basically tell you you had to accept a concession contract? What did you do at that point?
Told them no. We refused to vote on it.
And did you get any support?
From the UAW?
From rank and file people or other people around the country?
Rank and file people all across the country wrote letters, joined us in protest. We picketed Solidarity House. We're still out protesting right now. We've joined together in the UAW Solidarity Coalition, which is a website that you can go to, or in the Soldiers of Solidarity. That's also a website. And we go about trying to join the rank and file members all across the country. On March the 24th in Kalamazoo, Michigan, which was last Sunday, I had a meeting in Kalamazoo of rank and file members from all over the country, various unions, laborers, IBEW, steel workers, Teamsters, UAW, retirees, and all like that, came to the meeting, and we discussed what is happening to all of our labor organizations, not only UAW, but they're all having a lot of problems. UAW just the most rank. They're the most arrogant of the group, I believe. We have tried to take our case to Washington, to senators, to get the Labor Management Recording Disclosure Act changed to where that they can make some portion of accountability if we can get a one-person, one-man vote for these international officers instead of having just a one party. They've already gave Gettelfinger the presidency, and we haven't even voted yet. And like you say, now then, they're pulling the charter on my local, and that's an attempt to keep me from being a delegate to the international convention.
So they're afraid that you would go to the convention as a delegate?
Yes.
So they don't really want to talk about what happened to the Curie?
They don't want to. They not only don't want to talk about it, they absolutely refuse to talk about it.
What do they say? I mean, what's their justification?
They will not give a justification. I've asked it in several different times. I stood before the International Executive Board on April the 24th, 2000, and asked the entire Executive Board, why are you doing this to me? Jokic's reply to me was that you're not the first and you won't be the last.
And so that's pretty blatant. So when you have gone around the country and spoken out about your struggle for a decent contract and really against your own international, what have you discovered?
I've discovered that the international is really powerful. They control a lot of the good old boys in these local unions. I was warned a long time ago that once they get it in for you, they never forget. And these good old boys in these other local unions, they want to keep their cushy appointments or cushy jobs and the big, big money buyouts that they have all the time. The more that I go out and talk to people and try to join rank and file people together, the more I find out just how crooked and how dishonest they are.
It sounds like the members, a lot of UAW members, are intimidated.
They are. They're very intimidated. You know, it's they get intimidated from their local officers, what I call the good old boys or the gobs. Everybody is dancing to the music of whoever the administrative caucus is. When you've got all of them appointed at the whim of the higher-ups, and if they want to keep their jobs, then they have to keep their mouth shut and dance to their tune. Otherwise, they will be fired upon, brought up on charges, and everything else, and really intimidated.
Have there been any officials in the UAW locally have supported your struggle?
No. Yes, there has, too. Justin West out of Mitsubishi local up in Illinois, he's more than supported us. But he is one of the few. You got Dave Yetal up in Flint, Michigan, and Jan Austin, Gene Austin, and some of those people out of Flint in that area who were union officials. I think Gene was a committee person. They've all officially endorsed us, helped us, everything else. But when you talk about the majority of them, no. The majority of them comes out against us. I've had a lot of meeting with a lot of leaders of local unions, and they'll meet with me hidden behind closed doors, things like that, but they won't publicly come out and support us because the international would chop their legs off.
So they would put the local in trusteeship, or what would they do to a local that says, we back up the Accuride workers?
Oh, they'll just absolutely come down on you, and everything you try to do, they'll just come totally down on you. Justin, they're down on him so hard that they're trying to get him thrown out of office, everything else.
What are they doing to him?
Oh, just everything. They're really, they won't send him any call letters to go to any of the meetings or anything else, just totally ignoring that he even exists. And basically cutting off most of the things that goes to his local and things like that from the international, you know. Just making it really hard on him.
So they're trying to isolate.
They also, they do a real big job about putting out all kind of false rumors and things like that about you. They've said about everything about us you can imagine. Their biggest thing is they tell everybody this is an internal matter, that we're just a renegade local. If we're going to be a renegade local because we won't take an anti-union contract and we won't bow, when they control 90% of the plants where we send product to, you know.
So in other words, if they had pressured Ford and General Motors, they could have won your struggle.
Either one of them. If they had pressured either one of them, if they had pressured both of them, it would have probably been over with in 3 weeks. Yeah.
And so you could have won your struggle.
Absolutely. When you got Gettelfinger, who was a regional director at the time we came out, and the one who directed me personally to take them out on strike was a regional director. He came out of Ford 862 in Louisville, which we are one of the main suppliers of that plant. If he'd have just talked to his own local 13,000 members to support us, then the strike would have been over within a month.
So the new president-to-be of the UAW actually had a personal hand in basically not building support for you and betraying you.
That's a fact. That is a fact.
And what is his explanation of what he did? What does he say?
He won't even talk about it. You ask him and he will ignore you.
So he doesn't want to talk about it. It's like it's below him, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Now, the this issue of business unionism and labor management collaboration, do you think that that's the core of the problem in your struggle, long struggle at Accuride?
There is no doubt in my mind about that. They do not want any flack to come up in their labor management relationship with these big companies over 400 members. We're just not important enough. They'd rather just go ahead and lose the union dues that and the local than to cause any disruption among their big three plants. Like, say, we was 100% supplier to Navistar, Ford truck, GM truck and bus, Peterbilt, Mack, Fruhoff, you name it, all UAW local plants.
So yeah. Your wheels that your members built were going to all these UAW organized plants?
That's correct.
And what did they say about getting solidarity from those plants?
Jokic promised me in May of 2000 that he would look into it and see what he could do. And he didn't do a thing, nothing.
Maybe he was too busy with the executives of those companies.
He was too busy playing golf with them. He was taking them up to Black Lake, the course that UAW members built, taking them up there playing golf with them and hobnobbing with them out in California and Arizona and the rest of the places that they go.
It sounds like these officials have become very, very removed from the struggles of the rank and file.
They don't have a clue what's going on in the rank and file. They don't care what's going on in the rank and file. All they care about is how they can line their pockets a little bit better, to set themselves in just a little bit better. And what happens is to locals like us is we're supposed to be quiet, not say a thing, be there just for numbers only, keep paying your dues, but don't protest and don't expect anything.
So they just want you to be little slaves for them.
That's a fact, yeah.
Now, your local is an exceptional local, your rank and file. Why is it that your members, despite the company's effort to bust you and the international UAW, the members of your local have basically taken on this monumental struggle against the company, the government, and the international? How have you been able to do that in your local?
Our members mostly come from a long line of fighters. A lot of our families have been mine workers from way back. We have been in this struggle for years. We started out in a real bad struggle back in the mid to late 70s when we tried to organize under Firestone. And we won that struggle after a 4.5 month strike. And our members basically are very dedicated, very unionism type of people. They don't believe in going backwards. They believe in the tenet of when one of us bleeds, we all bleed. Yeah.
So you have real solidarity in unionism.
That's a fact, yeah.
And it sounds like that could be the basis of really doing some real organizing in the South, that kind of solidarity.
If the UAW had come in here and helped us the way that they should have done back in 1998 and won our struggle and got us a decent contract, a fair contract, not a great one, but a fair one, all you would have to do was open your book up and start signing people up. I was working as a temporary organizer for UAW on the Toyota, salting the plant and trying to get people in there to vote UAW, and was making a pretty good start on it. And all these people now, they turn around and look at me and say, you know, what happened? Because I'm telling them how great the UAW is and all the rest of it. And then they see the publicity that came down behind this. They take our strike benefits away. They walk away. No UAW official, international official, has ever been on our picket line in 49 months.
So is this the reason that they're losing all these votes at all these auto plants around the country?
That's exactly what I think.
It sounds like there's got to be a reason, because they spent a lot of money, supposedly, or trying to organize these auto plants.
Well, they're spending a lot of money, but the people they got out there trying to organize don't have a clue. And
who do they bring in to organize these plants?
The only thing they bring in are is people that are yes men. They have if you have any type of independent thought, they don't want you. And they got people going out here with the attitude that they're better than everybody else, trying to organize people who are in the rank and file. And these people coming in trying to organize, they're trying to act like that they're below them. And then the company is using the UAW's tactics against themselves when they bring up, look here, look at 2036 in Henderson, Kentucky. Is this the union you want representing you? I mean, that's exactly what they did down in Georgia. They attached a note to everybody's paycheck to go to the local newspaper's website and look at what they're doing to that local in Henderson, Kentucky. Well, our local was flooded with phone calls from that local down there. And as a result of it, they pulled the organizing drive out of there and canceled the vote.
So when
did the same thing up here at Wapaka Foundry up in Tell City, you know, and just on it. They did the same thing at Nissan in Smyrna, Tennessee. Our situation was used down there too.
So the companies who don't want the union there just go to town with talking about what's happening to Curite.
That's right, yeah.
But they don't seem to have learned the lesson.
They're too arrogant. They're too far removed from it. They don't care, because as long as they can keep their little stories going out there, then they've still got this ton of money that they're setting on top up there, and they're still out there doing their little bits with the company executives and telling them everything's going to be all right and going right on down the road.
So it sounds more like they're businessmen than real trade unionists.
That's exactly what they are.
Now, you have, even though they've revoked your, I'm talking with Billy Robinson. He's the past president of UAW Local 2036, Henderson, Kentucky. And they have been locked out for how many months, Billy?
49.5 months.
49.5 months. And in the course of that, they've been having a battle not only against the Curite company, wheel company, but also against the UAW International, which has sought to force a concession contract down. How many votes have you had to vote on a concession contract, Billy?
9 votes.
So they've had 9 votes to vote on a concession contract. Each time they've been rejected. Now, Billy, even though this international is revoking the or saying to the company, the Curite, that they no longer represent you and your members, what is the situation now?
Well, we've got the letter Saturday. So all I know is that basically that would put us like at-will employees, okay? We're going to try to file some board charges on it. Don't expect the board to do anything, because the UAW has the National Labor Relations Board in their pocket also.
Isn't this a Bush-appointed board?
Yes, and see, we have filed 57 board charges over the last 48 months, no more than that. Just got 3 rejected last week. We filed 60 board charges over the last 48 months. And the Region 25 out of Indianapolis, Indiana, has rejected every one of them. We appealed them to the General Counsel in Washington, and the UAW withdrawed every one of them. So we haven't been able to get any place with the board, but that's about the only move I know of. Now, with them telling us they no longer wish to represent us, that makes us at-will employees. I don't know if the shoe's going to drop now and the company will fire us, lay us all off, or how they will go about breaking our seniority, but I'm sure that something of that nature is going to happen within the next few days, you know.
Do you still have a picket line out there?
We had one yesterday.
So you're still picketing?
I don't know. After this letter, I really don't know where that puts us.
Now, they're saying that they no longer represent the workers at Accuride. You've been locked out for many, many months. What are they saying to the working people of America when they take that kind of action?
Oh, Lord. You know, this is the epitome of a company union selling out its members. That's the only way that I can put it. This is telling the working people of the world that we will represent you as long as you do not protest, cause any problems or anything else. And if you cause us any problem or cost us any money, or we actually have to do something, then we'll say, yeah. It's exactly what it says.
Now, you're not planning to go away. I understand you may be going to the UAW convention.
I will be at the UAW convention in Las Vegas.
What dates is that going to be?
That will be the last week or so of June. I don't have the exact dates right at my hand right now, but it will be the last, be somewhere in the area of the 20th of June, somewhere in that area.
And what can UAW members around the country do to raise this issue and to say that they want to support your struggle and they feel that you've been betrayed?
UAW members and locals can pass resolutions of their local and send them to the International Union to be raised at the floor of the convention, to where that they are appalled by the way the International has done our local 2036. They can write me letters at Billy Robinson in care of the Henderson Workers Solidarity Fund, P.O. Box 248, Sebree, Kentucky, S-E-B-R-E-E, Kentucky, 42455. Any donations to help us in this fight to continue going out spreading the message is welcomed. A matter of fact, we need the money desperately if we hope to do very much more fighting. Some locals have raised money for us, but not the officers. We need local unions, officers and executive boards to write letters or pass resolutions in support of Local 2036 and against the International doing what they have to this local. But the only thing we have asked for is a fair contract.
Yeah. And you are planning to take it, as you say, to the UAW convention. I mean, the state of organized labor, or the AFL-CIO, the UAW union, seems to be that they're in a very decrepit state and they're paralyzed. Does that have anything to do with the fact that they really don't want to fight management in many cases?
Well, it's where they went away from an adversarial relationship with management to an agreeable relationship with management. They no longer wish to argue with management. They would rather accept what management says and go along with it because of the rich perks that all of them get out of it. It's a sad state for all of us. Now, yes, I will be in Las Vegas at the convention. Last week had a roundtable union democracy meeting in Kalamazoo, Michigan. More than likely within a month and a half, somewhere towards the latter part of May, I will be scheduling another meeting. This meeting is not only for the rank and file UAW people, it's for any union member or any person interested in the future of labor. And it's to discuss solutions and resolutions and whatever else that we can do to fight this type of wholesale sellout of rank and file members. You know, we've got to stand up and take our unions back. If it comes back to what they did in the late 30s and the sit-down strikes and all the rest of it, then maybe this is what we're going to have to do. We're looking at possibly calling for a sit-down, total sit-down strike for Labor Day in support of organized labor and trying to get, you know, somewhere that the rank and file can again have a voice in their unions.
So you're saying that, that workers in this country, like for Labor Day, should take some national action of closing things down?
We absolutely should. We have got to get back. The only way that we can get people who make laws or anybody else in the membership is to get the rank and file to join together again, because that is the only voice that they're going to recognize. And I'm doing everything I can to organize all workers all over this country to join in doing something of that nature. You know,
now,
we've got to
you...
do something. If we don't, we'll be back worse than they was in the early 30s.
Why don't you talk a bit about some of the other union struggles that you've come upon in the course of fighting for your membership around the country? I know that the UAW concerned these were retired workers who were fighting over their pensions, and they collected food for you. What were their issues?
Their issues is they were lied to by UAW and by company people out of General Motors in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and told that they were going to close the plant down within a couple of months, that you people need to take your pensions right now and in order to do this. And they went about trying to get these people to do that. A whole bunch of people retired, but yet the plant stayed open another 7 years.
Isn't that fraudulent?
Yes, it is, but you can't, you know, it seems like that the UAW's got deep pockets. They managed to get some judges and people like that to rule against them. They went to court. The exact same thing happened in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the workers up there was awarded a huge sum of money. But the Supreme Court, or the Court of Appeals in Michigan, even knowing of that court's ruling, the situation was identical. Even knowing that court's ruling ruled against them. And these people have took the fight of all kind of union members all over this country and made it their fight, and including in fighting for themselves. Somebody, is some local or something, has gets in a big problem or something like that, these UAW concerned people will go to wherever that local is and picket for them. They'll do food drives for them. They do yard sales to raise money. They do whatever they can to help they can. They get out and actually spread the word. Now, you know,
that sounds like real unionism.
All you want, but when you actually get out into the trenches and show which side of the coin that you're on, can only true solidarity be realized. You know, and I've been finding that out in my and going around the country and talking to various locals and various leaders and various rank and file members as to what's going on in their local, and it just absolutely staggers my mind and seeing what I knew was a bad situation turned into a horrible situation. We're not talking about thousands of dollars. We're talking about millions and millions of dollars are being shuffled into these so-called leaders' hands, and that's why they're selling out the rank and file. And I mean, you know, I went and talked to some part-time GM employees up in West Virginia. Some of them had been part-time for as much as 15 years. This is in violation of the national agreement. We finally got board charges filed for them, and I think they're getting some recognition now that you can't pay union dues and not expect to have representation. They told them, said, you pay union dues, but you're not allowed any representation. The only thing you get for your union dues, you're able to vote for your executive officers. That's it.
So
no representation, no nothing.
So the union officials were taking their money and telling them they had no rights.
That's right. And this, you know, this is just another incident of how corrupt the leadership has gotten. You know, when I see, you know, entire leadership supported by the regional directors, and knowing that they're running a drug smuggling ring in the plant, and they just look the other way.
They're allowing a drug smuggling ring in the plant?
Yes.
What plant is that?
I'm not going to get into that one.
Okay.
But like I say, I went up there and talked to people, and it was common knowledge all the way across the board. The UAW concerned people had already been in there. I couldn't believe it. I just sat there and listened to one horror story after another, just one after another. last week when I was in Kalamazoo. Local, I think it was 167 was the one who came there, and they talked about their, they just indicted one of their executive officers. All of a sudden, their local come up $460,000 short with no accounting for where the money went.
But isn't there a board of the UAW, some kind of appeals board or some kind of to make sure that there's no corruption or no attack on democratic rights?
It's called a public review board. It's basically a court of last resort within UAW. And I went through that fiasco over the administratorship. And all through their decision, they said they had absolutely no right to place us under administrator. They had no right to do this. They had no right to do that. But yet, since the charter and the recognition of the National Labor Relations Board allowing the UAW to be the exclusive representative of the members of Local 2036, it didn't say anything about us having a local. It just said they recognize the International Union as the exclusive representative of all the employees. So by that token, the International had a right to come in anytime they want to and take over, you know. And, you know, when you got people like that, I don't trust them. I've seen from the dealings that I had with them that this is just another shuffle of paperwork to put you in a long, drawn-out internal review procedure to where that you get involved in all that before you can get it done. They've absolutely wore you to the ground. It took us almost 2 years to get it through that channel just to get a hearing.
And what happened at that hearing?
Just like I said, they said that the UAW International didn't have a right to place us under administrator. There was no basis for placing us under administrator, that all their facts was totally wrong, but since the charter was in the name of the International Union, they had a right to come in and take over everything anytime they wanted to.
So basically, it's a fake board. Is that what you're saying?
That's fact, yes.
Well, what do you see as far as changing the structure of the UAW and other unions to make them more democratic?
We've got to be able to make them accountable. But I'm not a scholar on how to make them accountable, but I fully believe one member, one vote.
So at present, do the UAW members have the right to vote on yokage and their international officers?
When you get above the local officers, you do not have a right to vote. Like I say, you've got an administrative caucus. They'll pick who the next leader is going to be. As I said, they've already given the nod to Gettelfinger. They'll go through the dog and pony show called the International Constitution Convention. But he's already got it because there's no way that you can get opposition against him. When you've got the appointment system, and he's got 430-some-odd international reps that will be at that constitutional convention, you raise up any dissent. Their full job, and their job, their future job, requires them to shout you down or that you cannot get anything on the floor. Even if you try to get it on the floor, they turn the mics off on you. They've done this before. And you take a hall that's got as many as 3,000, 4,000 people in it, and you got 500 of them screaming and hollering and cussing you and everything else, you cannot get anything on that floor in opposition to them. You don't have the money or the backing to run against them. Basically, UAW is set up as a one-party system.
So you're saying
they
act like
about it.
You're saying they act like international goons, kind of preventing the members from really raising discussion and debate?
That's a fact. When you go out there as a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, your international rep who services your area takes his delegates in a room, and he tells you who you're voting for. And not when that is over with, not within a day, the regional director does the same thing. So when you go to the floor to cast your ballot as a delegate, you already know which side of the bridge your butter is on. You either go along with the program or your history. Yeah.
So that sounds like a tremendous amount of intimidation against independent, critical thinking workers.
Absolutely. And if you and if they find out in one of the larger locals that you're running for delegate, they break out the big guns. It's like in Flint 594 in Flint, Michigan up there. They got 460 people appointed by the president. That's not accounting the elected officers, appointees. These appointments, they come into every union meeting. You let anybody try to get up in a union meeting, you got 400 appointees plus screaming and hollering at them and threatening them and cussing them and everything else. You just can't get anything done.
And who is paying these appointees?
Generally, the companies. Through the national agreement, they pay them. I know in one local, the appointees were getting anywhere from 50 to 60 hours a week at top pay, $21 to $25. Majority of them is never in the plant. It's collusion. You cannot get anything through on it. The issue's been raised so many times, it's pathetic. Some of these people making $175,000 a year.
So they'll do anything to keep that job.
Yes.
And is this the case in a lot of these locals?
Yes, it's the case in 95% of them. Anytime you got those large locals, generally the company is the one who's paying all the officers and all the appointees.
So this money that the companies are paying to appointed staff, what you're saying is that these appointed staff are basically serving the interests of the company and not the rank and file. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. You're not going to bite the hand that feeds you. You know, the old saying here in Kentucky is, you know, the hand that feeds you is out there is the one that you're going to go with. So the company's paying you $150,000 a year. You're definitely not going to go against them. You're going to do everything you can to curry favor. Yeah.
And we may be talking about, what, thousands of people who are being paid by the company to enforce the discipline?
Yes, thousands and thousands of them. They were telling me the other day, out of one of the GM locals, I was talking to some people up there, the committeemen, they have grievances that they argue with the company. They may take 10 grievances up there. The company will pay him, say, $100,000 for those 10 grievances. This is probably a low figure that they generally do. Because this one committeeman said the company gave him $96,000 for these grievances that he had. He said, in fact, the grievances wasn't worth more than $1,000. He said, what they do, each one of these committeemen have a bank account set up. The money is written to this committeeman, and he's to go back and to distribute this money any way he sees fit to those people who wrote the grievance, in whatever way he seems fair. So the company gives him $100,000 for these 10 grievances, you would think that that's $10,000 per grievance. But if he goes back and he gives this one guy $50, and there's another guy $1,000, and another guy $75 for his grievance, he may put out $3,000, $4,000 on these 10 grievances. The rest of it he keeps.
He's putting it in his pocket?
He's putting it in his pocket. This happens all the time in all these big locals.
And what about there was a case in Pontiac where they were actually had a strike out and they to get some people in the plant that they were related to some of the officials? What was that all about?
That's one of the locals that I was talking about, Gene Austin. He was a committeeman. And he had a few grievances. They gave him $96,000 in negotiation for those grievances. The president and some of the other committeemen got up in the hundreds of thousands of dollars for grievances. That same strike that went on up there. They kept them out on the street 80-some-odd days while the international rep, who was Shoemaker, the president, and some of the other committeemen was trying to get family members hired into General Motors. They managed to get Shoemaker's son hired in straight into skilled trades, which is against the contract, in order for him to get his year of service in so they could put him on staff. They also did the president's nephew and several other people like that. I think there was six or seven people that was hired. They kept them out on strike until they agreed to hire these people. So the people in the plant didn't know that they was out there in General Motors about 80 days needlessly just so they could negotiate them hiring some of their family members.
Well, did Shoemaker ever go to jail, or were there any criminal indictments against the officials of the UAW?
Not yet. The court case is all still pending.
So who's fighting the court case?
Dean Austin and some of the rank and file members from Local 594 under a lawyer named Dunn. Harold Dunn, I think it is. He's got it filed in court.
So it seems from what you're saying that the corruption within the UAW is growing.
It is. It's all the way down into the officers and stuff of some of these large locals. Now, your IPS plants, your independent parts suppliers, like I come out of, you have a certain amount of democracy in those because they're smaller locals. They're not tainted by all the corruption that goes on, you know. But the corruption is widespread.
Well, here in the Bay Area, we have a NUMMI plant, GM NUMMI joint venture, and one of the activists, Carolyn Lund, is a trustee. What's happened with her?
They've done everything they can. They've threatened her. They've took pictures of her house and sent them to her. They've tried every way in the world to intimidate her. They call her everything under the sun that you can think of, every derogatory remark. She gets absolutely no support from our officers. She's tried to run for various political offices within her local and gets beat out every time whenever they bring out the good old boys. Yeah.
So they basically try to silence and get people fired or get people removed.
That's a fact, yes.
And when is this going to change, Billy?
When the rank and file members stand up and raise enough cane and join together to get it over with. Right now, most of the rank and file are getting their paychecks. They're thinking, well, this happened to somebody else. But you can believe me, if it's happened to somebody else, your turn's coming. Unless you stand up and start taking control right now and start joining together into some kind of manner to take back your unions. Yeah.
Now, you've been using the Internet, and maybe you can give your email address to organize. How is the Internet being used by UAW members and your local to build support for your struggle?
We're going out to anybody and everybody. We network fairly well. We have a couple websites set up. My email address is wrobi27316@aol.com. And I say we get out all over the place. We have several, like I say, we got UAW Solidarity Coalition websites. We got the Sufferance website. We got the Soldiers of Solidarity website. All of these are just areas in which we try to get out and to internet among everybody and to, I think, the Carpenters, their website, the Teamsters website. All of these is just various areas that we get across to and talk to people and let them know what's going on. Yeah.
So you're saying that the same kind of problems exist in the Carpenters and the Teamsters and these other unions?
Yes. We went to Washington to testify before the workforce development thing, trying to get the Labor Management Recording Disclosure Act changed, and the Carpenters were there in force, and they had horror stories from all over the country.
And the Carpenters, of course, have pulled out of the AFL-CIO?
Yes. Well, see, UAW also broke off ties with AFL-CIO in the state of Kentucky and Indiana because Thurman didn't like who the AFL-CIO was endorsing for office. He wanted somebody else. And
so you do what we want, or we're pulling out?
Yes.
Do the members have any say on this kind of thing?
No.
Do the members have any say about who the UAW International is going to be supporting politically?
No.
But they spend quite a lot of money.
They spend a lot of our dues money.
Without a vote of the members.
You're right. They also, they spent $50 million building a golf course at Black Lake without a vote of the membership. They bought an airline, a mechanically defunct airline without a membership vote. They also, they're talking about buying a resort out west for 30-something million dollars that is in bankruptcy, run down, everything else, without a vote of the membership. They bought a radio station in Florida without a vote of the membership. And when the people at the radio station wanted to organize, UAW put it into bankruptcy and get rid of everybody.
So in other words, they bought some a radio station. Then when the workers tried to organize, they put them into bankruptcy.
That's a fact. Yes.
And how do they justify all these things? They just
do
it.
They don't justify it. They're that arrogant. They don't think they have to justify it. They use the little kicker that between executive board thing, the president has a right to act by polling the executive board. Of course, you know, everybody's there appointed. Everybody's got their finger in the pie. Who's going to resist? Until you can make them accountable, they're going to continue with their arrogance and go right ahead and selling out the rank and file union members. In 1983, when they put the joint funds together with General Motors, which they call the Nikola Fund, which amounts to that every hour a man works, a nickel is put into this fund. And we had 1.5 million members. Incidentally, the chairman of the board of the joint funds is Stephen P. Jokic. And there's about $6 billion in this joint fund today. They put this fund together, and essentially UAW went in business with General Motors and the big three corporations by making them lean and mean and more competitive with the foreign competition. Well, when they went into business, their job was to train these laid-off auto workers to go out and find other jobs. So they would train these auto workers to go out and find jobs, a lot of times that were non-union and lower-paying jobs outside of UAW. So what they did, they joined in to partnership with the corporation to deplete the membership of UAW. We had 1.5 million in 1982. We're down to 600,000 or below members right now. Now, you tell me where it comes to building unionism and organizing, but we keep going backwards. We've lost almost 1 million members in just a shade over 20 years.
And have they been able to organize any auto plants?
No.
So how can they go to their convention, their constitutional convention in June, the UAW leadership, and say that they've been winning anything?
Oh, they say, oh, we won this state workers here, or we won these teachers here, or these people who don't have a right to strike here. The due structure is solid on them people. You never have a disruption and nobody bleeding the strike fund of any money.
So you mean they get the agency shop?
Yes.
Which means that people have to pay in. And they once you're in, you're stuck there for a lot of workers.
You're right.
So is this the reason that workers in this country haven't become more organized?
I'd say it is. I'd say it is. I think it's a lot of members have seen the corruption, the misrepresentation, and they don't see, what it's going to benefit them. They look at Accurate and Local 2036 and, you know, why should we do that? We pay dues for 25 years and they sell us out.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for coming on, Billy. And again, what can people want to do if they want to contribute to your struggle?
They can send donations to the Henderson Workers Solidarity Fund at P.O. Box 248, Sebree, Kentucky. That's S-E-B-R-E-E, Kentucky, 42455. If you don't have money to send, just send a letter of encouragement. Send a letter to Stephen Jokic or Gettelfinger or any one of them up there protesting their actions of what they've done to us. I would appreciate sending a copy to me so I would have it. Come on the Internet. Contact me by Internet any way that you can do it so we can join together. We can try to get a coalition, a group together to try to take our unions back, to make them back to where they're representing the people.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much, Billy, and I respect tremendously the fact that you've struggled on and fought for what's right and for your principles, because I think that's what we need in the labor movement.
Well, so, the fight is still out there, and giving up is not an option.
That's true solidarity. So thank you for joining us on Labor Line.
Thank you.
This is Steve Zeltzer, and you've been listening to Billy Robinson, past president of Accurite Local 2036. Welcome. I'm glad you're able to be on the show.
Thank you a lot, Steve. Good night.
Good night. And this has been Labor Line Radio. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be on again. You can also reach Labor Line by writing to lvpsf@labornet.org, or you can also go to, you can write to Labor Line at P.O. Box 425584, San Francisco, California. And thank you for joining us on Labor Line.